Hey, I'm Johanna Wagstaff.
And hi there, I'm Rohith Joseph.
And we're asking for 10 minutes of your day to go through the 10 things that the UN recommends we can all do when it comes to climate change.
Please don't leave.
No.
And also, the things aren't new.
We are just wired to not do them.
We promise you to help you figure out your brains, and you and your people can make better choices to combat climate change.
10 Minutes to Save the Planet is available now on CBC Listen and everywhere you get your podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
This is World Report. Good morning. I'm Helen Mann. Ending plastic pollution is the focus of high-stakes negotiations happening today in Ottawa. More than 4,000 delegates are gathering there to hammer out a global treaty aimed at ending plastic waste. 175 nations are taking part with the aim of developing a legally binding agreement this year. Our international climate correspondent, Susan Ormiston, has more.
Plastic pollution is found in every corner of our planet. We are breathing, drinking, and eating it.
Canada and Stephen Guilbeault, the Minister of Environment and Climate Change, are hosting delegates from around the world to try and negotiate an end to plastic pollution.
Of all the environmental challenges that we have to face, it's probably the one that is the most tangible to the public.
But one of the hardest to solve. An estimated 11 million tons of plastic pours into our oceans every year. Mountains of plastic trash are piling up in landfills, expected to triple in 16 years. And consumers are awash in plastic and frustrated, says Inger Andersen, executive director of the UN Environment Program.
The primary attention right now is on the production of that which we use once, twice, or very few times and then discard. And it's that throwaway economy that we've gotten used to and that we live with.
Recycling can't begin to keep up, says Dr. Adil Najam, president of the Worldwide Fund for Nature.
We can improve recycling. We must improve recycling. But we must also be clear, there is no pathway out of the mess we are in with recycling alone.
The week-long negotiations in Ottawa could lead to a global treaty by the end of this year. It would be a first on plastics. Susan Ormiston, CBC News, Ottawa.
In the United States, police have been cracking down on pro-Palestinian protesters at campuses across the country. Dozens of students were arrested as police dismantled an encampment in New York University. Another 45 student protesters were arrested at Yale. Students are calling for a ceasefire in Gaza at Columbia University, MIT, and on the West Coast at Cal Poly Humboldt. Students chanting Free Palestine clashed with police after barricading themselves in an administration building. On some campuses, the protesters have been accused of anti-Semitism and hate speech. It has become an issue here in Canada, too. Ottawa police are investigating a potential hate speech incident after protesters in front of Parliament Hill were filmed glorifying the October 7th attacks by Hamas. But as Kate McKenna reports, hate speech charges are rare in Canada.
It's odious speech, and I hope that anybody associated with this rally would distance themselves from it.
Richard Moon, a law professor at the University of Windsor, says the words used at a pro-Palestinian rally may be hateful, but that doesn't mean they qualify as hate speech.
I think it probably doesn't, but there is not a lot of case law.
Free Palestine.
Video from Saturday's protest shows people cheering.
Come level to resistance.
As a man with a megaphone says, long live October 7th, the date when, according to Israel, Hamas killed about 1,200 people in southern Israel and took about 250 people hostage.
I, too, have seen the videos of...
Ottawa Police Chief Eric Stubbs says they're working to determine whether the comments are enough to lay hate speech charges.
If there is hate crime that is said, it is not something that we tolerate and we will fully investigate.
Moon says the bar is very high for prosecutors to allege that speech crosses the threshold into hate speech.
Things like describing the members of the group as animalistic or subhuman, or as preying on children, or as inherently violent in character. I think that gives you some sense of how extreme the speech must be.
Whether or not charges are laid, Jewish Canadians say anti-Semitism is on the rise, and the words used at last weekend's protest are an escalation in an already difficult time. Kate McKenna, CBC News, Ottawa.
British Prime Minister Rishi Sunak says his government will begin flying asylum seekers to Rwanda in the next 10 to 12 weeks.
The question is that motion A be agreed to. As many as are of that opinion will say content. Contrary, not content. The contents have it.
Last night, the House of Lords approved a bill to enable the migrant deportation scheme. For months, it had been fighting the move, but it relented after the Prime Minister forced Parliament to sit late into the night. Sunak says this bill is necessary to deter people from crossing the English Channel on unsafe vessels chartered by human smugglers. But critics say the plan to deport people to Rwanda is inhumane. This morning, French media are reporting at least five migrants have died trying to cross the English Channel overnight. The judge overseeing Donald Trump's criminal hush money trial has reserved his decision on whether or not the former president violated a gag order. Prosecutors want Trump to be fined $10,000 for comments he made on social media. Trump was ordered not to speak or post comments about jurors, witnesses, and others who are involved in the case. Later today, former tabloid publisher David Pecker will resume his testimony. Prosecutors allege Trump worked with Pecker to purchase and kill negative stories about him during the 2016 election. Trump is facing 34 charges of falsifying records in a hush money case involving an adult film star. Indigenous leaders from across Canada are gathering in Toronto this week for a conference to discuss their economic future. Top of mind is a $5 billion Indigenous loan guarantee program. It was introduced in last week's federal budget. Many are hoping it will help put First Nations on an even playing field with other investors. Paula Duhatchuk explains.
I think it's long overdue.
Robert Michel, elected chief of the Stilaten First Nation in British Columbia, knows firsthand how hard it is for First Nations to get access to financing.
We live on reserves, which has no equity or value to the banks. It's very hard for us to generate any type of revenue.
He's hoping a new Indigenous loan guarantee program will change that. Ottawa will guarantee up to $5 billion in loans for Indigenous communities to participate in natural resource and energy projects. The program should reduce borrowing costs for First Nations.
I'd say it's a good start.
Jamie Lickers, Senior Vice President of Indigenous Markets with CIBC, expects the loans will get snapped up fast.
There are a number of projects that I know nations are ready to move forward with.
But whether the feds can match that momentum remains to be seen. Nilo Edwards, CEO of the First Nations Major Projects Coalition, says this program is a long time coming and he hopes it's up and running soon.
Well, I'm hoping that government can for once act at the speed of business on this one and get a good program in place with urgency.
As for Michelle, the Stilaten chief, he says with access to financing comes access to power.
It gives us that cash skin in the game to come there and sit there and say, hey, we want to be partners and we're going to pay our way. And I think that's a great thing.
A way to build prosperity for generations to come. Paula Duhacek, CBC News, Calgary.
She paid $24,000 to a recruitment agency to bring her daughters to Canada to work in healthcare jobs in Newfoundland. But the jobs and their money were lost when their relationship with the agency owner ended in an intractable dispute. Now, as Chris O'Neill Yates reports, the family's fortunes have turned after CBC shared her story.
Welcome to St. John's International Airport.
Joy Thompson has waited for this moment for decades. For her children to finally join her in Canada, along with their husbands.
At last, they're here. Every trouble is worth it.
Thompson left her daughters in the Philippines when they were 9 and 10, worked and sent home money, educated them as nurses. Now daughters Aubrey and April will finally practice nursing in St. John's after they get their Canadian certification. Aubrey is overjoyed.
Thank you for being strong for us. I love you, Ma.
The family's dream of being together in Canada took a turn when Wanda Cuff Young heard our original story.
I was truly shocked.
Cuff Young owns an international recruiting agency in St. John's and took on their case free of charge. This province desperately needs nurses, says Cuff Young.
I thought, you know, I had the capacity to help because I knew people and I knew who to talk to in the provincial government.
April has a 14-month-old daughter. She's happy her mother will get to know her granddaughter.
My mother left us when we were still young, started working abroad, and I was still 9 years old.
And now they just want to make up for lost time and build a life here. Chris O'Neill Yates, CBC News, St. John's.
And that is the latest national and international news from World Report. For news anytime, go to cbcnews.ca. I'm Helen Mann. This is CBC News.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.